Popular Science Radio. Headlines, extreme science, gadgets, green tech, military tech, odd inventions, medicine. Popular Science Radio with your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Today, I've got some fun stuff to talk about. How about 3D printing? We've heard about it. We've talked about it a little bit. I think we even talked one time about how you can 3D print food at some point. This whole 3D thing is going to be rocking the world, maybe in your house someday even. And people are selling these things cheaper and cheaper all the time. So what the heck? We have a author of a book called 3D Printing Will Rock the World, just like I said, John Hornick. And John is with us. He is a, gosh, he's got 30 years experience as a counselor and litigator at the Finnegan IP Law Firm, one of the largest IP law firms in the world. He's also founder of the Finnegan's 3D Printing Working Group. And obviously, there's a lot going on in this 3D printing world. He advises clients about 3D printing, how it may affect their business, all the rest. This is a very interesting thing that is happening in our world. Why? Because if you think about it, you are able to manufacture something right before your eyes without having to go to China to have it done, you know, cheaply. You can do it right in your living room, right on your table if you want to. It's a disruptive technology, especially in the world of aerospace. Automotive, I remember, gosh, probably 5 years ago, I was at a friend's place that Edelbrock, they make performance parts. And they were 3D printing manifolds. And he was saying, yeah, this printer's about $50,000. Now, 5 years ago, $50,000 was a small 3D printer. Today, I think you can buy them for a few hundred dollars. Also in the healthcare industry. So John is with us right now. Again, author of the book, 3D Printing Will Rock the World. John, welcome to the show. Maybe you can shine some light on 3D printing for us. And it sounds like you're the guy in the know. Talk about it.
Well, thanks, Alan. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Well, yeah, 3D printing is a disruptive technology, like you said, because you know, the way things have traditionally been made, you'd have an assembly line with 10 or 12 machines on it, and you'd need each one of those machines to make a particular part. But with a 3D printer, you can make that entire part in a single build in a single machine. So, you know, you get rid of 10 or 12 machines, and you also don't need as many people to operate them. So instead of having to make things in far-off lands where labor costs are low, we can bring that type of manufacturing back to countries like the United States where labor costs are high.
Well, you know, and I have a friend who has a 3D-printed car, Local Motors, and they're able to print this car other than the engine and the wheels and tires and the steering and things, the wiring, but they're able to print this car in 24 hours now. And the other part that's cool about all this is it's recyclable. So 5 years down the road, you're thinking, I want a new body style. You go in, they melt it all down or whatever they do, and they print you out another car, and you put your drivetrain back in, and away you go. The 3D printed world, to me, is fascinating. So the book, what was the genesis of that, obviously, other than the fact that you guys are helping folks protect their intellectual property in the 3D printed world?
Well, when I first started to get into this area several years ago, I realized pretty quickly that my interest, I'm a lawyer, I know I'm an IP lawyer, but I realized pretty quickly that my interest goes way, way beyond the law. And, you know, sometimes you find something that you're really passionate about, and when you do that, you have facts at your fingertips. You can recall things that you've heard, and that's what it's been like for me with this topic. So I started a database a long time ago to gather information to keep me up to date. And at some point I realized, hey, I've got enough here for a book. So I decided to write the book, which is, it's only a very small part of it. It's about the legal side. Actually, most of it's about the technology and its benefits to society.
Well, it's interesting because to me, as I'm, you know, in the midst of being a businessman and having to fight these battles and protecting my intellectual property, as we all do when you're in business, I'm looking at thinking about now, what do I need to protect if I decide to go into this world? And maybe you can help us and anybody listening that may be thinking about manufacturing 3D printed parts or tchotchkes or whatever the heck it might be, whether it be a whole car like Local Motors. So stay with us. I want to keep you on the line here for a couple of segments because I love the fact that this is also your specialty in the law firm Finnegan, which is as interesting as the rest of it. And is there a dark side to 3D printing? So we'll find out about that and more from John Hornick. He is the author of 3D Printing Will Rock the World. Why? We'll find out on the other side. Popular Science Radio will be right back. The sound of the breezes that blow.
Yeah, I'm trying. Introducing the newest addition to the Craftsman C3 lineup, the C3 19.2-volt brushless drill driver. A brushless motor means you get 50% more runtime, 30% more power, and a motor life 10 times longer than the traditional brush motor drills. With up to 600 inch-pounds of torque, LED integrated lights, and a Jacobs metal ratcheting chuck to lock bits solidly in place, you'll get even your most difficult projects done fast. Available at Craftsman.com, Sears.com, Sears, Sears Hometown, and Sears Hardware Stores. Craftsman, made to make.
Listening to Popular Science Radio, I'm Alan Taylor, our show brought to you in part by Craftsman, America's most trusted tool brand, made to make. And they are celebrating their 25th anniversary of the Craftsman Club. The Craftsman brand is over 90 years old, or are celebrating their 90th, I think, this year or next. But if you love making things, well, you know about Craftsman tools. And here is something that will probably rock the world of folks that love working with their hands, 3D printing. WillRockTheWorld.com if you want more information. John Hornick is the author of the book. Again, the website is just 3DPrintingWillRockTheWorld.com. Book available also on Amazon and or on Kindle. Let's talk about the benefits of 3D printing versus traditional manufacturing methods. I mean, I can see them and it's kind of clear, but you know what? For those who haven't heard about 3D printing, let's go for it.
Well, so like I was saying before, if you traditionally you had a bunch of machines, you'd need all those machines to make a part or product. And they all had operators, and so there was a lot of labor involved. So in today's world, that means that you have to make that part in a place where labor costs are cheap. But in a 3D printer, you're building up that part layer by layer by layer from nothing until you have a finished part. You do that in one machine. You're eliminating all those other machines, you're eliminating a lot of labor costs, and that allows you to make things in countries where labor costs are higher.
Okay, that's one.
And also,
I was going to say, now, what about design? And maybe that's where that whole, Finnegan IP law firm comes in. Because if I design something, and it's cool, and I put it out on the internet, and somebody knocks it off. But let's talk about design, because a lot of folks... they're like, okay, I could buy a 3D printer for, $300 or $500, whatever it is. But where am I going to get my designs from? Or can I design them myself? Riff on that for a minute.
Well, both, really. There are a lot of libraries and repositories on the internet already where you can go and you can find 3D printable designs. There's one called Thingiverse, Thingiverse.com. There are plenty of others. And you can go to those sites and you can find designs that you want. You download them. A lot of them are free, and a lot of people put their designs out there to be used freely.
Right.
And then you download that, and you print it. But you can also do designs yourself. And so you would have to have, some programming, or I should say some design programming skills to do that, and have a good computer program that allows you to do that. But you can create the design yourself. And another way you can do it is you can have a scanner, and you can scan a part that you already have. And from that, you create a blueprint from the parts you already have, and then you can 3D print that.
But is that knocking off, though?
Well, it depends on what it is. If you're copying something that is protected by some type of IP rights, yeah, you may be infringing somebody else's IP rights.
Right. Well, I love the name here, Thingiverse, T-H-I-N-G, I guess Y or I-E, Thingiverse?
No, it's Thingiverse.
Okay, there you go. It's just so funny, I mean, and do you know what the price of the less expensive 3D printers are? Are they $300 or $400 these days?
Yeah, they're the price range. There's two. It's important to point out that there's two sides to this industry. There's a consumer side,
right,
and there's an industrial side. On the consumer side, Somebody made an arbitrary cutoff at $5,000. So any machine that costs less than $5,000 is a consumer machine. But they range in price really from a few hundred dollars up to $5,000.
Depending on what you want.
On the industrial side, exactly. Depending on what you want, how big it is, and how sophisticated it is. On the industrial side, they range in price from about $5,000 to $5 million.
Yeah, I was talking to Jay Rogers, who is the founder of Local Motors, the 3D printed car company. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, millions of dollars. But the interesting thing about Local Motors, I don't know if you're familiar with them, is the reason why the name is Local Motors, because they figure that people can have just a small shop big enough to have that printer in there. And, you know, one bay for the printer and one bay to put the car together and have, you know, a car manufacturing company in local towns without having to have a huge manufacturing facility. So people could design their own cars or bring them back and recycle the car. So it's a very interesting concept, and I wish them all the luck in the world. We're watching them. They were at SEMA, the Specialty Equipment Market Association trade show, 2 years ago, and they printed a car and built the car and drove it out of there in 4 days from the time they started printing till the time the trade show was over. They drove it out under its own power and led the parade out of the car show. Very interesting stuff. Stay with us. I want to take another break here. If you're interested in 3D printing, we've got the man right here who wrote the book, 3D Printing Will Rock Your World. I should say will rock the world. And that's .com if you want more information. 30 years experience as a counselor and litigator at the Finnegan IP Law Firm, one of the largest IP firms in the world. He knows his stuff. You're listening to Popular Science Radio. Be right back. On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet. The new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance. Well, you're listening to Popular Science Radio. My name is Alan Taylor. We're here every week talking about science, technology, health, all kinds of interesting stuff that's happening in our world. Right now, it's 3D printing. Our show is brought to you in part by Bridgestone. They're passionate about making tires that you can count on to perform when it matters most. Bridgestone Tires. Our guest is John Hornick. He is the author of 3D Printing Will Rock the World. And it's a book that's out. You can find it on Amazon or on Kindle or on the website, 3DPrintingWillRockTheWorld.com. John, coming back to you. There's so many interesting things about this. And it really, I believe, is a world-changing technology. The fact that it's consumer-friendly, the way that they have kind of opened this whole thing up to the consumers. It's also called additive manufacturing. Why do they call it additive manufacturing versus 3D printing?
Well, you know, there's kind of a distinction that people make in the industry between additive and subtractive. The way things have been made for years, you know, in the whole Industrial Revolution is that you have a block of metal, for example, and you cut it and you mill it and you drill it until you have the final part. And so you're subtracting material.
Right.
Now, with 3D printing, you start off with an empty platform and then you start adding material layer by layer by layer until you have a finished part. So you're adding up the part from basically from nothing to something.
And then it's interesting. I remember when I was learning how to weld back in just after high school in junior college. And every now and then you'd blow a hole through and the guy would say, all right, now you got to fill it back up. And it's not always easy to do that. And it takes a certain technique and you have to do it right. And I think that, you know, it's something that, you know, this what you'll call additive manufacturing or 3D printing has been around for a long time. I'm assuming. How long has it been around?
Well, the technology was first invented. There's several different types of technology here, but it was basically first invented in the 80s.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was used mostly for prototyping, so it was called rapid prototyping. Mm-hmm. It's really only been within the past several years that people have started talking about 3D printing, and it really kind of took off when President Obama mentioned 3D printing in his 2013 State of the Union address.
Mm.
And before that, you know, you heard mostly about rapid prototyping. Since then, you hear mostly about 3D printing.
How about the fact that you have the difference between, you know, genuine products and now the ability to knock off those genuine products? Will it ever, you know, will this 3D printing revolution ever make genuine products maybe more valuable or meaningless? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I have a whole chapter about that in the book, and I do question whether 3D printing could eventually make the concept of a genuine part meaningless, because, you know, a company could be making the part, or they could be having a fabricator make it for them, or they might just be selling the design, and they might sell the design to you, they might make it available on the internet, and then one of hundreds or one of thousands of different fabricators could print out that part, and maybe they modify it. One of the strengths of 3D printing is customization. So maybe they customize it because the company wants them to, or maybe they customize it without the company wanting them to. So you wind up with a whole mishmash of parts. You don't know where they came from. You don't know who made them.
Mm.
Maybe they're made according to specifications. Maybe they're not. So right. I think that there could come a time when the question of what's genuine, or, you know, what is a genuine part, that really becomes kind of a meaningless question.
What about, I notice, and I got about 2.5 minutes left here, and I'm going to ask you a lot of questions, but the disruption checklist in your book.
Well, yeah, I think this is a disruptive technology, and for it to be really disruptive, there are certain things that have to fall into place, and that's the disruption checklist. And, you know, one of them is you have to be able to make big things. You have to be able to make really, really small things so you can print circuitry. You have to be able to have hybrid materials.
Mm.
You have to be able to make things fast and make a lot of them. You have to have innovators.
Be precise.
So there's certain things that have to fall into place to have this disruption. Yeah. And they are falling into place.
Yeah. It's interesting to watch, too. Is there a dark side to 3D printing?
Well, yeah. You've probably heard about Cody Wilson, who 3D printed a gun in 2013 that was made of plastic, so it wasn't detectable by a metal detector. And so that scared a lot of people. There are also some criminals out there who have used 3D printers to make false fronts for ATM machines. So, you know, they stick it on the front of the machine. You think you're putting your card into the machine. You're really putting it into a false front. It's collecting your data.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, there's definitely a dark side. But I think that the potential benefits of the technology really far outweigh the negative things that you can do with it.
Yeah. All right. Final thoughts on 3D printing will rock the world. Your book and the whole industry. And I mean, it seems like you're pretty pro 3D printing here.
Oh, I am, definitely. And I mean, for a final thought, I would say I think what's great that's being done with this technology now is we're getting it into schools. And the kids are starting to grow up with the technology, and the technology is growing up with the kids.
Right.
And it's being used not just to teach kids how to use the machines, but it's being used to teach STEAM education. It's being used to teach math. You can print out a model, for example, of a geometric model. So you can use it really to teach any kind of subject.
Yep. I happen to think it's very cool. 3D printing will rock the world. That is his book, John Hornick. Put a .com on the end of it. You can also find it at Amazon and or on Kindle. Coming up next, we're going to talk about The Nest. Have you heard about The Nest? John, thank you very much. You're listening to...
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Appreciate that. It's Popular Science Radio. Be right back.
You know, the summer light seems to shine in your blush.
Where does the love for a car come from? If the car is a Subaru Legacy, the answer would be the symmetrical all-wheel drive. Power goes to all four wheels all the time for optimum grip. The Subaru Boxer engine's lower center of gravity makes the Subaru Legacy more responsive around corners and gets better fuel economy than front-wheel drive competitors. What you have then is a midsize sedan with grip, handling, and enviable fuel economy. It's no wonder it turns people into people who love cars. Love It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
Well, you're listening to Popular Science Radio. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show is brought to you in part by Subaru. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. I will tell you that I have a home that has been completely remodeled. I spent 4 years remodeling my home. I don't know how we're going to go from, you know, 3D printers and what have you to Alan's remodeled home. Well, it was a big project I did for Home Magazine, and it was a fun project, and I have the most coolest house you've ever been in. Now, not because it's just beautiful in every way, shape, or form, but it was thoughtfully put together. I had an interior decorator, designer come and help us with all the lighting and all the stuff so that, you know, things are lit where they should be, because a lot of times people don't think about that. You know, they just have their ceiling and then they think, oh, we'll put lamps here and there. You got to have lighting done right. You got to have, you know, flooring done right. You got to have everything you do. It's got to be done right. And I put in this most fantastic HVAC, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system. I have one son that's got a little allergy thing going on, perhaps, you know, borderline asthma. And so we're just kind of careful. We got a hypoallergenic dog, right? I mean, that's how I am. My mother-in-law helped us buy a multi-poo. I would have never spent the money she spent on this dog, but it was her gift to my family because, you know, I mean, who doesn't want to have a cute little white poodle-looking dog running around the house? And Charlie's pretty cute. Smartest thing you've ever seen. But we just try and think of everything, right? And so on the outside of the house, I have, you know, the siding that looks like wood, but it's like concrete. You can't even catch it on fire with a flamethrower. The roof is 50-year roof. I mean, I have to do that roof till I'm 165 years old. I really try my best to do everything that is smart. And even to the point that I have, you know, I have this, what is it called? HEPA filter for the HVAC to make sure that the dander and dust that is in the house, you know, gets caught in this giant, humongous filter. We've got a humidifier built, April Air system. I mean, it's like, you name it, we have it. But we do not have one thing that I should have, which is my producer, Brendan, says to me, you got all that great stuff. Even I got a pizza oven in my house. I'm like the only guy in the state of Oregon where I live that has a pizza oven in my kitchen, a professional pizza oven. So, but I don't have what Brendan has, which is a smart thermostat. And he's been telling me, you got to get a Nest. You got to get a Nest for your Nest. So Nest is the company that makes the product that is the Nest Learning Thermostat. Nest Labs, and you can check it out online at nest.com. Mark Rose is on the line. He's the product lead for this newest third generation Nest Learning Thermostat. What is that? It's the beginnings of a smart home. Mark, I've done all this stuff, and me and my wife and our family, my wife and I should say, and today is her birthday. Maybe I should get her a Nest. But the point is, we love our home. We're going to be putting in a pool. And I mean, it's like, this is the home for the rest of our lives. I've got shops. I've got places to put my weightlifting machines. I have thought out everything. But what is next is something so simple. Is what are these? A couple hundred and $50, right? $250. I was over at Home Depot the other day. I haven't even let you talk yet. It's funny. But anyway, I was over at Home Depot and I said, there's that damn Nest. It's like, it's begging me to buy it. But what I want to know is it really, is it going to save me the money? Is it the beginnings of my venture into the smart home? Because I know that this stuff is out there. It's very affordable now. Talk me into buying the Nest, Mark.
Okay, so first, if it's your wife's birthday, happy birthday to her.
Exactly.
And the Nest
thanks.
Would make an awesome, awesome present. And your question is, but why should I buy one? And the answer is, you've actually answered it yourself, which is, it's a learning thermostat that actually saves you money. And so it learns. It learns what temperatures you like. It creates a custom schedule for you. And it learns when you're home, when you're away. So it can do things like when you're away, it automatically shuts off.
Oh, I like that.
It can do things like when you're adjusting those temperatures, it knows not to make it too warm or in the summer is too cool. And by doing these things, it actually saves you money. We've gone through a number of very rigorous tests versus traditional programmable thermostats, for example. And over those thermostats, Nest saves an additional 10 to 12% on heating and cooling. So it will pay for itself.
All right, let me stop you and ask you then. This thermostat has to be so freaking smart to know that my wife is always cold when I'm hot, and I'm cold when she's hot, and now she's going through the change of life because we've been married 30 years, and all of a sudden she's hot for 5 minutes and then she's cold for 5 minutes. Can it learn? Is it called the Nest change of life or menopause thermostat? What happens when you have that going on, where there's all these and the dogs in the house when we're not home? How smart is this thing for $250?
Well, I don't think it'll solve all the problems. You know, my wife likes it a little warmer, and I like it a little cooler.
Right.
So I think those will go on for at least a little while. But it definitely does know things like pets. It's funny. We have so many of our customers have pets, and they love pets, obviously, and they love to have their pets. And so our thermostats are designed to look for objects in the house, which basically say, oh, there's someone moving around, and it's tuned, if you will, mm-hmm. to understand the difference between people and pets. And we have other products as well besides Nest Thermostat, like the Nest Cam, Nest Protect, which also are kind of sensors which look at the home and try and figure out, okay, that's a person, that's a pet. Okay, that's a pet. Let's maybe ignore that for now so we can keep the heating off and save some money.
How do you do this for $250? This seems like it should be like $2,500 for this. Really?
It's definitely great value. So I will say we've been working on this for about 4 years. And it's funny, when I first started working at Nest, it would be like, you know, a thermostat, that's it. Is there more to it? And I've got to tell you, the complexity behind getting this right, the detail behind getting this right, is actually a very, very hard problem to do. And that's what we spend our energy doing. Mm. It's a very difficult problem. We've been working on addressing it. I think if you look at our reviews, a lot of people are very, very happy with what we've done. Mm. We haven't stopped there, and we're continuing to improve it as well, too. But it's for consumers, it's a great value, and as an industry product, it's certainly a leader.
Well, let me just say this. If you can solve some of the marital arguments that we have through the Nest and make the Nest a nicer, gentler, safer place, I'm playing with you. All right, I want to find out about other products. He's like, where is he going with this one? Anyway.
Yeah, boy, those are tough problems, too.
Exactly. I want to find out what other products Nest makes and a little bit more about having that smart home that we've all dreamed of and lowering the power and heating bills. What the heck, right? It's all good. We'll be right back.
There may have never been a roaring 20s if not for John and Horace Dodge. And that roar has only gotten louder over time, thanks to the Dodge Challenger and Charger RT Scat Pack Editions. 6.4-liter Hemi V8, 485 horsepower, and 475 pound-feet of torque. That's some thunder. And if you listen closely, you can almost hear the Dodge brothers. It sounds like they're still having a pretty good time. Dodge, their spirit lives on. Dodge and Hemi are registered trademarks of FCA US LLC.
That's right. We're talking about your Love Shack right now on Popular Science Radio. The science and technology behind the good old thermostat. Nest Labs, they have the new Nest Learning Thermostat. It's $250. You can buy it all over the place. I saw it in Home Depot the day. I stood there and looked at it, and I thought, God, I got to buy one of these. But I got so many questions. So fortunately, when you have a radio show on 50 radio stations, you can call Nest and say, can we talk to somebody on there? Average energy savings here, it says 10 to 12% on heating bills and 15% on cooling. Now, with, you know, summertime coming along, this seems like 15%. This thing will pay for it in a couple of years, pay for itself. My question to Mark Rose, who's the product lead over at Nest Learning Thermostat, Nest Labs, is my house. Not that I have a huge house, but it has, you know, we did this big remodel. So we added on another 1,000 square feet. And I have two complete different heating and air conditioning systems. Do you have two Nests? How does that work?
So if you have two separate heating and air conditioning systems, and they're both separate systems, then yes, you can get two Nest thermostats.
Yeah.
And they'll actually work together to make sure your overall house is at a temperature that you want.
Mm. Do they talk to each other, or they're learning so they get used to what's going on, whether it's in the bedroom suite, which is this 1,000 square feet, is like a master bedroom with a big closet and a big old bathroom, and then, of course, a laundry room. So that's one heating and air conditioning unit. And then the other one is the rest of the house, which is two bedrooms, a living room, a TV room, and a big old kitchen. So, I mean, it doesn't really care because it's learning what's happening in those zones. Is that what it boils down to?
That's right, exactly. So it's learning what's happening in those zones, both independently and together. So you can actually set the temperatures independently, and then you can go even online using the Nest app on your mobile phone, for example, and turn the temperature up or turn the temperature down. So back to your earlier example of your wife, where she wants it too warm. So if she's in the bedroom, she can turn the temperature up, and you're in the other part of the house in the living room, and you want a little bit lower, you can turn it down.
Can I make her wear like some sort of radioactive pin that whenever she gets hot, it turns it on, the air conditioning or something?
Yeah, we're working on that future product.
Radioactive.
Cool new thing.
Right. Now, here's one more.
Radioactive. Right.
Exactly. Here's one more. What about my office? Now, my office building is like, I think we got about 6,500 square feet. And we're all upstairs. There's 1, 2, 3 thermostats upstairs. And then nobody is ever downstairs. Same deal. I can have 4 thermostats and they'll all kind of work together? Or is it because of what's actually happening in each zone? And that's kind of my, it sounds like what's going on is it, these are watching what's happening in their own little universe.
Yeah, it's really what's happening in each zone. And when you talk about office space, we have, we definitely do have a number of people using it for their offices, but most of our customers are definitely using it for their own homes, mm-hmm. for the residential homes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But would it work in an office?
Yeah, it would. Yeah, we do.
Okay.
We do have people use it in their offices, right?
What about...
make sure it's compatible and those sorts of things, but
sure.
Yeah, we have a lot of people using that.
Yeah, cool.
A lot of doctors' offices, for example.
Exactly. All right, well, so what about other products that Nest offers?
So Nest offers two other products. We offer the Nest Cam, which is a camera which records things that that go on in your home. People use it to watch their pets and make sure their home is secure and watch their first steps of their babies walking and things like that. And then we also have Nest Protect, which is a smart smoke alarm. So for example, if you've got a smoke alarm going off and you're at the office, you're mobile phone would pipe up and say, hey, you've got a smoke alarm going off. Or it might say, your wife's cooking in the kitchen again.
My wife's a good cook.
In the kitchen again.
My kids, exactly. Gosh, that's funny. How much money are these products? Because the Nest Generation 3 thermostat, which is the learning thermostat, everybody, $250. What about these other products?
So the Nest Protect is $99. And the Nest Cam is $199, $200.
You know what? These are all really, really cool products to have. Now, the question I have about the cameras is, can you talk through them? Because I've seen those types where you can actually, talk to somebody through the internet, I guess is what it boils down to. Are yours a little more basic than that?
You can talk through them, and this is really cool.
Wow.
Actually, it's funny. We see a lot of people talking to their kids. We see people talking to their pets.
Yeah, right.
So you can definitely talk to it. And the people on the other side can talk back.
Well, that's...
You can actually hold a conversation.
That is totally awesome. I mean, it's amazing what is happening in the world of technology, everybody. My son-in-law, who is also my producer, And he has had, I think, a couple of Nests, because I see that you're at Generation 3 at this point. And he's just raving about these things. And I always thought, well, I have two thermostats at my house. I have about four or five at the office. I don't know if they're going to work together, but it sounds like it's zone specific. And it doesn't matter how many you have. They're watching what's happening in their own little world. And now with cameras and the ability to have smoke alarms, you guys are really killing it. Nest.com. And if you want to have a smart home, guess what? For my wife's birthday, I'm going to have to run out and get her a Nest, the new learning thermostat. Mark Rose, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it. Great products.
Thank you very much.
All right, we'll take a break. Popular Science Radio. Be right back. Calling all hot rod enthusiasts. Come out to the 11th Nashville Nationals on May 13th through the 15th at the Nissan Stadium. On Friday and Sunday, have your chance to ride Autocross for Kids to benefit the Austin Hatcher Foundation for Pediatric Cancer, empowering the children and their families faced with pediatric cancer. To learn more, visit hatcherfoundation.org/autocross. You're listening to Popular Science. I'm Alan Taylor, our show brought to you apart again by Subaru. Love, it's what makes a Subaru, Subaru. So we've talked a little bit about a lot of things here on the show today, but last but not least, let's get in a little talk about, how about, you remember those Google glasses? How they kind of, you know, they came and then they went, and then what happened to them? Well, there's a company out of France. It is called AMA. They have something called the Expert Eye, Mobility M1, and to talk about it is Anne Fleur Anderle. She is in Boston, although I've spoken to her just briefly with her wonderful French accent. Let's talk about what is this Expert Eye. I understand it's a hands-free solution based on smart glasses for remote assistance, which I can see this reducing, well, any big company's carbon footprint, because if somebody's at a job site and they've got these smart glasses on, you know, then they can connect with somebody and let that person see what they're seeing, whether it's, you know, on a tower. They don't have to climb that tower twice. So there's a lot of good things that could come from this. Talk about what is Expert Eye, Anne?
Yeah, absolutely. So you got it perfectly right. Expert Eye is a solution that is based on the use of smart glasses. Google Glass is one of them. There are also a few others. And what we do is that we develop the whole software solution on the glass that will allow someone who's on the field to connect as soon as they're facing any type of challenge that can be technical with a remote expert. So that can be true in the maintenance field, as you were mentioning. That can also be true in the medical world for paramedics, for example, to start a procedure of care before making it back to the hospital.
Great.
So, yeah.
I think I can see, you know, ambulances. And I've seen this even when they were talking about Google Glasses, how that was one of the big ways that they were planning on using this was in the medical field, because you can deal with something in the moment. You know, I mean, you arrive on the location, the person's, you know, maybe not breathing, whatever, and the doctor can be watching from the moment of a major problem and help assist the paramedic. So, I mean, I love this for life-saving operations, and that goes true for anywhere with a connection of sorts, I guess you might say, worldwide. And you guys are out of France, so this is something you guys are dealing with there and now bringing it to the U.S. What about costs? I mean, how much is something like the Expert Eye going to cost?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the way it works, it's coming with both software and hardware. It's a monthly subscription, and it's ballpark around $350 a month, about.
Right. So it's obviously designed for a business, because you have it set up in the monthly payments. And I can see, what about, I noticed, I was looking at the website here just during the commercial break, seems like there was even auto mechanics. I guess if somebody is having an issue and they want to show the manufacturer or whatever, what they're looking at in real time, does that make sense? I mean, is that what you guys are doing?
It makes perfect sense. Yeah. And there is a cool feature for that type of work that we call the photo board. basically what that does is that the remote expert will be able to draw or annotate the field of view of the person who's on the field. So with people with different accents, like me, for example, when you want to convey an information quickly, you can also just draw an X what should not be done and circle what should be done, for example, or number the steps of things to do as well.
Well, so I can see that then, especially in a worldwide application, this would work great because at some point there's a communication breakdown, and like you said, you can circle it or put an X or point to something. Very, very interesting. And will it be available soon? Is it available now here in the U.S., this expert?
Yes. We just launched our operations here in the Boston area a couple of months ago in January. And so, yes, it's available in the U.S. Starting now.
Oh,
we just launched that new product 10 days ago.
And it's the Expert Eye Mobility M1 is the product. The website is a little different than you might think. It is AMA, which is the parent company. So www.ama, the letter X, and then PERTEYE for experteye.com. So AMAX, PERTEYE.com is the company. And thank you very much, Anne Fleur Anderle from Boston, but by way of France.
Thank you very much.
Well, there you go. For those of you who have your needs in that area, this smart world keeps getting smarter, whether it's the Nest for your home, for your thermostat, or the ability to communicate with your company that you're working with, or a manufacturer of sorts, or an expert to help you with Expert Eye. All right, I'm Alan Taylor. That's about it for this show, Popular Science Radio. We're looking into, obviously, health and science and cool things that make your life better every week right here on radio stations around the country. Don't forget, check us out at ernlive.com. ERN for entertainment right now. ernlive.com. See you next week. I won't lose sleep on that, 'cause I've got a plan. Ready to become an entrepreneur and purchase a business, but need funding? Sure, you can ask Dad, Aunt Betty, or friends for money, or you can turn to a company that has helped more than 10,000 entrepreneurs successfully launch their dreams of business ownership, Benetrends Financial. Through Benetrends' proven and innovative funding strategies, entrepreneurs like you get the funding you need quickly, safely, and economically. Get started today. Call 866-423-6387 or visit Benetrends.com. That's Benetrends.com. Benetrends.